Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Lucy James, you watched some porn on a train yesterday.
Is Sorry, that my intro? Okay, I didn't watch it. That's my intro. Are you serious?
We've started.
Oh my god.
You've got to explain yourself now.
You're not going to introduce Matt? Or yourself?
Matt's here. I'm Simon. Lucy, what happened on the train yesterday?
Oh, okay. Well, oh god, there's a bee. Sorry, I've just been accosted by a bee. Hi everyone, I'm Lucy from GameSpot.
We'll do that in a minute.
But
don't worry.
Bundled my own to the podcast. I was in Newcastle for the past couple of weeks visiting my mum, and I got on the train back down south last night, and the guy kitty corner from me on the train pulls out his laptop and just starts photoshopping and some porn. And then he
photoshopping.
He opened Premiere and started making GIFs, and I was just like, does he, like, I can see everything. I know LNER trains, quite nice, by the way. I know they're the old Virgin ones, but it was lovely. Had tons of room.
No, they're not anymore.
God.
Stop it.
God.
Good
Lord. Like, first of all, you know, good for you, sir, for, like,
confidence.
Just the confidence.
Oh, you haven't mentioned this was porn of himself.
Well, I think it was. Like, well, I couldn't see him. I could see, like, his hair occasionally when he leant forward and the hair colour matched. But I was just like, I've just never seen the audacity of it on a train before. And, like, good for you, but mm-hmm. I don't think a public train is the place, sir. Yeah. And then the train...
He just couldn't get to his office. It needed to be delivered.
Maybe. Maybe he had deliverables. But then the conductor came and he didn't have a ticket. And I was like, come on. Come on.
That is the worst thing you did that day. Anyway, yeah, Lucy's on the podcast this week. We're very busy at the moment, and frankly, it was only me and Matt were really available. Plus, Lucy has played 12 minutes, which we'll be speaking about soon. So who better to have, really, than Lucy James, especially when she's got stories like that to tell.
Oh, I mean, I've met my anecdote quota for the month now, I'm afraid. I'm all out.
Oh, I'm going to get one more out of you. I'm sure somewhere we'll get it. We'll talk about 12 minutes in a bit, but first, why don't we kick off by talking about Call of Duty? Obviously, yesterday, Call of Duty Vanguard was finally revealed. It feels like leaks and stuff, we've known what this game is and what it's been called for about 3 months now or something. I don't know. They finally revealed it. We're going back to World War II, and I'm into it. I know you are, I think, as well, Matt, because I think we're both quite big I was going to say fans of World War II. Interested in...
Oh,
interested.
My favourite war, Simon.
Oh,
I love it.
I'm a real fan. Both interested in World War II and like that era of Call of Duty games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks very much like it's kind of calling back to Call of Duty 1, which was the first game I played. Like, I got into Call of Duty right from the start. And it's got that whole thing of... It's set across multiple different theatres of war, so going back to Stalingrad... First game.
Whee.
Going back to Operation Tonga. First game. Going back to North Africa Corps. Second game. It's all there. It's all there, Simon.
Yeah, it's all there. I'm into it. Lucy, we've never really spoken about Call of Duty. I don't know if you're into Call of Duty or ever have really been.
We've literally played Warzone together, Simon.
We've played Warzone, yeah. We played it for an hour and then never played it again.
We
which
played
kind of
it
gave me
more
an impression.
Than that. Well, it's because you and Krupa are way better at it than I am. And Tam is also very good. And then I feel like you just dropped me for Stefan.
That's not what happened.
Well,
I think I've played plenty of games with you over the last few years.
Yeah,
so
it's usually okay.
If there's one thing you can complain about me, it's not the amount of time I give to you, frankly.
That's fair. I have a kind of on-off relationship with COD. I really got into it, kind of Modern Warfare 2 and Black Ops. The original Black Ops was, for some reason, my big COD. That was the one, at least in multiplayer-wise, I devoted a lot of time to. And then since then, I've kind of picked him up, not really ever committed that much to it. I would say that beyond Warzone, I haven't really touched COD multiplayer in a few years. I think the last campaign I did... I definitely remember doing the Kevin Spacey one.
That was a bad game.
Yeah. Did I do the Kit Harington one? See, I kind of, they kind of all merged together for me a little bit. But having just watched Band of Brothers and, like, the two of you, it's weird to say have an interest in World War II, but I feel like if you grew up in Great Britain, you learn so much about World War II, you kind of have a natural predilection to knowing stuff and learning about that war. And so I'm intrigued by Vanguard. I think the narrative team behind it is also, like, that's part of what I'm really excited about. It's like the vast majority of the writing team on this one are women, which is very, very cool. And yeah, I'm very intrigued by it.
Yeah, Matt, what got you most excited about that trailer? Because we did a trailer breakdown on site, which you contributed to mildly. You know your war. You can spot the Battle of Midway when you see it.
It helps that they told us it was the Battle of Midway as well.
Why are you telling us? You just look like an expert.
If it's a bunch of dauntless planes over the fucking Solomon Isles, then it's definitely the Battle of Midway, isn't it? But So I'm a really like Call of Duty World War II, as in like the previous Sledgehammer game that they did. I think. I don't know how much of the narrative team is shared between those projects, because obviously people come and go through studios.
A lot of them are new, I think.
What I will say is that World War II actually is one of the better narrative campaigns. Like, there's a real good... That's very heavily influenced by Band of Brothers, but is sort of essentially about this fostering of a family between especially two people in that unit, and goes on a really interesting journey with them. So I've got a lot of hope that the narrative here isn't just to stitch levels together and kind of hold the set pieces, but actually will have some kind of emotional heft to it, which I think World War II, you kind of have to. They can't be sort of blank slates, because there is that having to honour the fact that it was a fairly tumultuous time for a lot of poor people. So hopefully there's that to it. But yeah, the multiple perspective deal, it means that you get a lot of gameplay variety, you know, if we're really just kind of like sticking it down to what it is as a video game, moving between those different conflicts offer different types of terrain, different types of kind of weather that influence the way that you play. So I'm excited for that.
And also on the multiplayer side, they're launching with 20 multiplayer matches, which is maps, even not matches, which is a lot of maps to launch. Like, that's got to be the most in a Call of Duty game by far. I think it's normally around 8 to 12.
Yeah, is that a response to, because people really didn't like the amount of maps that launched with Black Ops Cold War, right?
Yeah, they were very disappointed. I think that was like 6 to 8. I'm just kind of intrigued, because I'm more interested in what they're doing with Warzone. They said there's a new map coming, which I'm intrigued to see if it's a replacement or if they're adding it as a separate map. So Verdansk still exists. I'm not sure yet. But I'm intrigued in that. And just, I've never really got into... So I love the World War II campaigns in Call of Duty normally, but I never really get into the multiplayer. I always, if I get into a Call of Duty multiplayer, I do Modern Warfare, really, or Black Ops. Like, I don't know if it's the weapons. I don't know. They just... I prefer the fast action of a modern game, I think, with SMGs, and you're just not getting that as much in a World War II game.
Are your boots too firmly on the ground? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, they're stuck to the ground. So I just can't move in the mud. I don't know. Yeah.
I haven't played a lot. Like, COD multiplayer is just generally not my bag. Like, I've quite liked Warzone. I've played a reasonable amount of Warzone since it came out, but really the only experience I have with COD multiplayer as a frequent basis is... Cardi, me and you played a lot of Modern Warfare when that came out, because the it's a gunfight, the 2v2 kind of quick fight.
Yeah.
That's got, you know, I quite like that because it feels like it's got a little bit of smarts to it. You have to kind of bait your enemy and force them around. Whereas the rest of the COD multiplayer suite I haven't played a lot of. But what I did play a bunch of is, again, Call of Duty World War II had, I can't remember what the name of the mode was, but it was kind of similar to Battlefield's Rush mode, where they were long maps and there were objectives down it. So, for example, the first one was Omaha Beach. You went up the beach. You had to breach through the sort of shingle section. And then there was like a bridge that you had to build, and so you had to get engineers to go up to it and hammer it, and you build a bridge, and then you could storm over the bridge, and then there'd be like another two objectives, and then you'd win the match if you were the attackers and obviously defenders. do that. And so that kind of stuff that's got a little bit more of, I say narrative, but in the way that like Overwatch has narrative to it matches, it got that to it, which I quite liked. But the general kind of paintball style running around an area and tapping people twice with an M1 Garand is not necessarily what I'm looking for.
No, but I'm just hoping for a good campaign, and hopefully that's what we'll get. We'll learn more soon, I presume. I think they've already announced, Jeff Keighley said at ONL, which is next week, opening night live of Gamescom, they're showing a section of gameplay from the campaign, I believe. So if you want to see that, do that. Next, out today is Ghost of Tsushima's Director's Cut. Out on
the Ghost
PS5.
Of Director's Gone. Is that how it works?
Yes. I don't know what that is, but we'll roll with it. I've been playing this. I'm not going to go into the pricing structure and how you get it, because even I'm confused, because you can't quite upgrade, but then you can upgrade for 20. But if you, I don't know. I'm not going to go into it. But basically, the most important thing, as well as it looking shinier, is that you're getting the new expansion called Ikki's Island, which is about the size, the area anyway, is about the size of one third of Ghost's main map. If you've played Ghost, you'll know that the whole island of Tsushima is cut into three sections, effectively. So you're kind of getting an area roughly the size of one of those again. And there's a new campaign on there. The campaign itself is only around 3 hours. It's not overly long, but it is a cool story and one that kind of goes a lot into Jin's backstory in his past and adds a lot more to his character. Doesn't really further on the story, but it's more of a backstory to his character. It made sense for me to play it after finishing the main story, because you can do it as soon as you finish the first act. At the start of Act 2, Ikki becomes available. I would kind of, because it's kind of a self-contained story, that I'd do it all in one go. I think I'd finish the main game, then do it. That would make sense to me. But yeah, it's more Ghost, which if you're into Ghost, you'll enjoy. But if you kind of had hang-ups on it, you're kind of going to have the same hang-ups, I think. But they have made it a bit more interesting, I think. Whereas, I know mine and yours, Matt, our criticism of Ghost is, I like it more than you, I think. But our main criticism is the mission variety isn't the most exciting. Or
felt to me like it was Assassin's Creed from 2007, which is, I guess, is when it came out.
Yeah, I know, like, people often criticise, like, yeah, Assassin's Creed games for their mission design, but then didn't criticise this for almost the exact same mission design. But they kind of have that in this, but I feel there's a bit more variety in what you're doing on Ikki Island. It's not the same, just go to this place, clear them out. They're all quite story-led and all have, like, an end point to them.
Are there, like, a lot of fetch quests?
No.
Like Ikki's delivery service?
Is that what that was?
That was literally the only I had that in my head, and I was like, yes, I'll just
that's why I'm here.
But
one thing I did enjoy is they have another reason I play it after the main campaign is actually probably a bit more difficult. They have some of the more advanced enemies straight away in this DLC, and I like that. One of my favourite, like, I love the Ghost combat. I think the combat is really good, because it's basically, like we've discussed before, the Arkham games with swords. And I like switching between the stances on the fly. So, you know, the certain stances that are against swordsmen, the certain that are against shield people. And there's some enemies that they've added here who have multiple weapons, who swap their weapons on the fly, so you have to react in turn.
That's
which
cool.
Makes it a lot more interesting. Yeah, I really like those fights. And there's a couple of, like, the big duels, and the duels are one of my favourite things in Ghost. So, yeah, I think if you love Ghost, you're getting more Ghost. And, yeah, play Ghost if you like Ghost. Who wants Ghost? I've got Ghost, and so does Sucker Punch. Play the Ghost.
It's almost as if you've got, like, a secret drinking game going with someone, and every time you say the word Ghost, they Ghost. Have to take a shot.
Yeah. I know neither of you have are you planning on going back to play it?
Yes, mate. I'm a mum's, I didn't have a PlayStation, but it has downloaded. The one thing I'm concerned about, because I loved Ghost, because for me it was, I totally get, like, the Assassin's Creed comparisons, the Shadow of War, Shadow of Mordor. It's, like, very much of that ilk. But to me, Ghost felt way more manageable and, like, less bloated. Like, it felt, And I mean, even just, you know, clearing the map was doable, trophy list was doable, and it was, and I just really enjoyed that world, and so I'm definitely very excited to get back into it. The one thing, because I was on Kind of Funny Gamescast this week, and we were talking about it, and like, Snowbike Mike, it's his first time playing Ghost, and so he finished Act 1, went straight to Iki Island, and he's struggling with it, because obviously you're still getting used to the game, and the difficulty kind of rocks up, because you have those later level enemies, and so he was getting his ass handed to him. But then Greg and Bless were saying that after, you know, that game came out a year ago, and beyond, if you played much of Legends, which the multiplayer on Ghost is very, very fun, is like trying to remember what the control scheme is when you go back, because then you're up against these lads who can just kick you about a bit. And so I'm very excited. I just hope that it kind of comes back to me, that muscle memory. I'm excited to see more of, like, it's obviously, it keeps the Ghost sort of flavor, but it's, you know, instead of foxes, it's got little monkeys and cats and stuff.
Got monkeys, and deer, got, and cats. And the monkeys are my favorite. I love them. But the cats are very cute as well.
Yeah. And, like, I'm intrigued to see, I think, because DualSense stuff is not a make or break for me at all, but I think when DualSense optimization is put in well, it's really, really cool. I think going back to like when PS5 came out end of last year, going from playing Astro and Spider-Man, where DualSense was like properly thought of, and it just felt really, really cool, to playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which had just minimal stuff. And it's like I said, it's not a deal breaker, but it's something that I'm intrigued to see developers use more of.
Matt, I know you never actually... Did you finish Ghost? Did you get like two-thirds of the way?
Act, I think. I got into the second act, yeah, and it was just a bit like... Wasn't quite... For me, I part of me likes the idea of a stripped-back Assassins, because even though I'm obviously well-known for being very outspokenly loving of Valhalla, I love a lot of what's going on in that game. But there is a lot going on, as Ubisoft tends to do. They have a good idea in one game, and then it just gets... Like... Put just in another one.
Tone it down.
Yeah. And I like that. I think my thing with Ghosts is that it kind of has like six or seven things that it does a lot again and again and again and again. And I kind of wish that it wasn't like, I don't want to go in the same shrine in a different place over and over. I wish, the one thing I think Valhalla does very, very well, which is kind of like the innovation like it has over Odyssey, is instead of having side quests, it just has these interesting people that's very Red Dead. And I wish that kind of Ghost was a little bit more like that, where I went and there was just a person that was just like, I've got a weird thing that I want you to do. And I feel like it doesn't do that in quite the organic way that I'd like it to.
You've got tails, but they're not ever really that memorable, I would say. The only tail that for me really stuck out is the last one that I had to do, because it slightly bugged for me and I couldn't find him. And I was like, literally, this is the one thing that I need to do to get the platinum. And then it all kind of came together at the end. But like, other than that, it's, you know, it's not the little girl looking at a leaf from Valhalla or something, you know, or the farting.
I will say, if you're going to go back, Matt, I'd recommend maybe just mainline it, because I know you got a third of the way in. I will say, I think from the halfway point on, that story becomes very good and it does end really well. I like that last, especially the last act, I love a lot.
I was thinking I might just start it again. Like, I won't be doing it probably this year, to be quite honest. There's a lot of good stuff that's about to drop. Obviously, we all know how excited I am for Deathloop, and that's basically my September kind of wrapped up there. But I feel like that's a... It's like a good January sort of game in the lead up to kind of like Elden Ring coming out, provided Elden Ring drops at that point.
Don't put that out in the world. Don't. It has to.
Yeah, we'll see.
Previous podcast, I've been very convinced it will, and I still sort of am, like, in terms of, like...
No way.
Shut up, Connie.
Japan is very good. Like, Japanese developers are very good at saying it's coming out here, and then it drops. They've got a good work ethic over there.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just conditioned to not believe anyone anymore. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. but yeah, I would say, I don't think, if you mainline that game, I don't think it would take very long. To me, it's... I think it's probably a 15 to 20 if you went straight main mission to main mission.
Also for me,
but
it's
some
like
of the tales
Christmas
are
game.
Very good though.
Yeah. It's like a Christmassy game if it fills the void of Assassins.
So yeah. That's out now. Enjoy, basically. What have we got next? Next we've got 12 Minutes, which is a game also out this week, came out yesterday on Game Pass. If you own that, then it is basically free for you. This is a game I think we've mentioned over the last few years quite a bit, because I first saw it Gamescom or E3 like 3 years ago. I was like, this looks amazing, this is what I want, and I just trust Annapurna's track record basically to provide banger after banger, and I've been looking forward to this game so much. I started it last night, played an hour. I like it. I don't want to be too down there. I do like it, but it's not exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is much more of a traditional point-and-click adventure than I ever thought it was going to be.
So yeah. I installed it on my Xbox, and I played the first screen, which literally you walk up to a front door and unlock it, and I was like, I can't play it on this console's not built for this game. Immediately installed it on my PC. Luckily, this is a wonderful thing about Xbox. It just carried on from where I got to. I'd literally obviously only done one screen, but my PC knew that that was where I got to. So yeah, I'm playing it with a mouse, and, well, literally just a mouse. You don't need the keyboard, which feels like how God intended it to be played.
Yeah, maybe I should do that. I haven't even thought about that. I wasn't having too many issues with the controls, though, but I know what you mean. It is just a point, like, you should be using a mouse, I think. But it's dark, I'll give it that. I don't want to spoil it, because you don't want to spoil anything if you don't know what this game is.
Say what happens in the first loop.
Yeah, because that's in the trailer. So, like, this game takes place over 12-minute loops. Well, seems like a maximum of 12 minutes. Sometimes they can last, I think, 4 or 5 minutes is when, like, the first inciting incident happens. And basically, you and your wife, you are James McAvoy, and your wife is Daisy Ridley. Actors, it's not actually them, but basically there's a knock on the door, and Willem, our favorite podcast hero, Willem Dafoe, maybe it was him on the train doing the gifts.
The last time I was on this podcast, we talked about Willem Dafoe.
He's always popping up, but... so to speak.
No,
please stop.
There's none of that in this game yet, as far as I can see, but he's basically quite, he says he's a policeman, but he turns up to your door, basically hogties you and your wife, and either kills her or beats you up. Like, it's quite horrible. And then that's kind of what happens, I suppose, if you don't do anything. And basically you realise quickly you're in a time loop, your character knows he's in a time loop, and you have to work out what's going on here. And that's basically what you're trying to do. And it's a very thoughtful game in a, well, not as in you need to think a lot. I'm not saying it's thoughtful.
I think you do need to think. Like, you need to think a reasonable amount to get through the puzzles. Yeah.
But it's a lot more trial and error than I like in some of these games. I feel like I'm just doing something. It's like, oh, I thought that would work. Oh, it's not. Oh, I thought that would work. And I think the frustrating thing about this particular time loop game is if you get 3 steps you think are right and then the 4 steps wrong, you have to go back, do those 3 steps again. Like, you are spending a lot of time doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, also sometimes there are some loops that I've done where I know the exact path I have to do, but it's quite tight in the time constraint, and sometimes you will just get lopped off at the end, even though you know you're doing all the right steps. It's like, no, restart. It's like, gotta do it again.
That's part of the reasons why I quite like playing it with a mouse, because I'm speeding with a mouse and I can literally get more actions done per
That's
minute.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, the cursor at speed is quite slow, so maybe I do make the switch to PC for this.
I mean, you've convinced me, because the controller scheme is definitely one of the biggest gripes that I have. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't feel natural on a controller at all.
I don't know why you can't just directly control him with your controller.
No,
and then
I don't know either.
It seems weird to me. But in terms of kind of like, this won't spoil anything, but like, you can pick things up in the apartment and move them around. It's a point and click. But one of the first things that you can do involves laying a table for a dinner, basically. Mm-hmm. And I can get that table laid before like the first interaction happens in the game.
What?
Oh, you're so good. I can get both of the mugs full of water. I haven't even tried getting the dessert out of the fridge yet.
So I can do... I can't get everything on the table. It just shows you how quickly the mouse is, right? But like, I can do... Yeah. I can fill up the mugs of water, I can get everything out of the fridge, and I can be ready to lay it before like the next interaction happens. So like, that just... It just makes me feel a lot more confident about being able to get stuff done rather than moving a very slow cursor around with a controller.
Like, I've only played an hour. I don't know how long you played, Matt. I know.
I'm almost at 3 now, I think.
Yeah. Okay,
I'm
Lucy, you've played
3 or 4.
Like, it's a tough game to know because I've seen some people say it took them 4 hours to complete. Some people say it took near 10 hours to do.
I was going
to
say, I think I'm stupid. So I think I'm probably behind where Matt is.
Oh, I mean, I would disagree.
Well, my issue with it is that I think it's quite obtuse in what it wants you to do. And you have to really listen to the dialogue and things that you assume are just sort of like a throwaway comment are actually very, very key. And so now that I've kind of appreciated that a bit more, I am getting through it. But I think my main gripe with it is that the dialogue system sort of conflicts with itself a bit. And it's weird because your character is going through a time loop and he knows he's going through a time loop. And there are different dialogues you can pick from the conversation system. And so in one, it just kind of breaks you out of the immersion a little bit, because in one, you can be screaming at your wife to tell me this, I need to know this very key piece of information. And then you can immediately go to, let's dance and have a romantic dance. And like, she just won't acknowledge the argument that you've just had. And it's like, it's kind of weird. And so, you know, after sitting in on, I was a preview for Deathloop a couple months ago, and just the kind of different way that they're approaching a time loop where a main character knows that he's in a time loop, it felt a bit weird. And yeah, there's some story stuff I'm not going to talk about because obviously spoilers, the game just came out. But there is some messed up stuff in that game that I don't think the writing necessarily tackles. Or even,
I might know some of the stuff you talk about, but
which like, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's really messed up, isn't it? And apparently, like, the end of the game, like, some of the stuff that comes up, I'm intrigued to get there, let's just say, and to see how
I think that's what's driving me on. I am enjoying it, but it's the story that's mainly driving me on. Yeah, I want to know what happened, and that's, it's got a good mystery at its core, which I'm slowly piecing together. I've found some stuff. I do think the voice performances are very good.
I did not know that was Daisy. Well, I knew it was Daisy Ridley, but her American accent is so good.
It's very good. And I don't think, from what I've seen of her in Star Wars, I didn't think she's a very good actress. In this, she's quite good. So, fair play. And James McAvoy as well, doing an American accent as well.
Oh, he's very good at accents.
He's just very good at it. And Willem Dafoe is just Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe is just Willem Dafoe, which is what you want Willem Dafoe to be.
Yeah.
One thing I do wonder is, so I absolutely agree with you, Lucy, that the dialogue, there's a lot of incongruity between kind of like, you're skipping from one sentence to the next and the tone is so different. I do wonder if they hadn't spent the money on Class A actors, whether that money could have gone into writing 5 times the amount of dialogue. Mm. So it was a lot more dynamic and understood what you were saying from one sentence to the other and could thread in something that was a lot more suitable. But what the thing I do like about the dialogue is I like the way that everything that's been said is actually very, very important. It's like, after the first like 5 sentences of the get of a loop, they start saying things that are actually suddenly become the solutions to puzzles that are staring you in the face. There is a section of the house that isn't quite right, and they mention it from the get-go, and that becomes a really important part of a puzzle loop. And I like the stuff, like, it's difficult, isn't it, to talk about obviously Daisy Ridley plays your wife and James McAvoy is the husband, and there was just a section of the house that, when I started looking at it, she started getting really upset about the fact I was looking at it. And then I realized later on, I was like, oh, there's a reason why she'll be upset. It's not just because it's to create that household banter and get the impression that your relationship isn't always perfect. It's to point out that there's something here for you to interact with and use for the next part. So I guess having grown up on LucasArts adventures, which don't give you fucking any clues at all, and it is literally just bashing items together, the moment you click and it's like, no, every piece of dialogue pretty much has something laid into it that you can use somewhere else, I like that. It is a David Fincher movie kind of not parody, but kind of like a homage, isn't it, to someone seen a load of Fincher, and they're like, he makes good edgy movies. I'll make the edgy game. I'm interested to see where the darkness kind of leads and whether that pays off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing more. Yeah, let us know what you think of it at IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. Let's move on to some more Marvel, because it's not a week on the podcast without some sort of Marvel chat, is it? What If started 2 weeks ago. We didn't speak about it after the first episode. I've still only watched the first episode. Matt, you've seen the first three. You've seen the third one. That isn't even out yet.
I know. That's
what I and get you can talk I'm... about it without spoiling anything.
Yeah. Do you want to just talk about the first? I've just spent a lot of time talking about the first 12 minutes.
Did you say you've seen the first or the second one?
I haven't seen any of it.
You haven't seen any of them.
Mate, I've been on the
You know
Sopranos
what the concept
kick.
Is, though.
Yeah.
You do. Yeah. So What If is basically the Marvel's kind of, I suppose
what
it's like Twilight Zone, really, isn't
Futurama.
It? It's like what? Exactly. It's animated. It's got the complete voice cast, though, of the character people
not
who play
the complete.
In the MCU.
Mm-hmm. Most of them.
95%. Okay, 90 to 95% of the actors who played the. Roles in the MCU films, and it basically their scenarios of. So the first one is, what if Peggy Carter became Captain America or Captain Carter? And that one, the first one, I enjoyed, but I didn't love, because it's not what I wanted from this show, in as much of it was basically the first Captain America film, but with Peggy instead of Steve, which is fun and there's some fun moments, but ultimately it wasn't a new story. Mm-hmm. Whereas I haven't seen the second one yet, but I've heard very good things that it is basically just a completely new what if this happened story.
Yeah, the second one is, you'll have seen this in the trailers, if you've seen the trailers, it is what if T'Challa was in space and was now Star-Lord, which I think is very, very cool. And the thing is like... You know how kind of Star-Lord's just a bit of a doofus and, like, everybody thinks he's a jerk?
Mm-hmm.
In this, like, T'Challa's just, like, the coolest character in the MCU, isn't it? So everyone loves him. And everywhere you go, like, he's part of the Ravagers rather than, like, the Guardians of the Galaxy. That had, you know, that sort of concept doesn't come out of him. And so the Ravagers have kind of become this heroic sort of really cool kids on the block that go around saving the galaxy. And mm-hmm. so... That leads to an entirely new sort of storyline in which the Collector's involved, and there are characters who are villains in the MCU are now not villains in this. There are, like, characters that look completely different because they've had different ways of life, you know, easier ways or harder ways of life. Get some Howard the Duck in that one. Voiced by Seth
Some
Green.
People like him.
By Seth Green.
I've never been into him.
Yeah. Weird, because I was just finishing up Mass Effect 3 when I watched that episode, so it's just like, what, Joker is Howard the Duck?
I do need to finish Mass Effect 3. I'm halfway through, roughly. Yeah, and it's also, I think, importantly for a lot of people, it's basically Chadwick Boseman's last performance.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the last times we'll hear him do anything new, and yeah, I think a lot of people just, like, you know, reaffirming how good he was, basically. And
yeah.
Apparently in this, he's also very good.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, he does it really well.
What is episode 3? Because I can't remember what episode 3 is.
Okay, episode 3 is, without spoiling it is a murder mystery sort of thing.
Okay.
It's mostly done from Black Widow's perspective. Bit of Nick Fury in there as well. But someone key in the Marvel Universe is murdered at the start, and she's... Black Widow has to look into it, and it's set in the time period of kind of like Iron Man to Iron Man 2, and the original Ed Norton Incredible Hulk is kind of like the framework area to it, which is really weird because Betty Ross is in it, and it's like, I didn't even realize that Betty Ross had been like accepted as a proper part of the MCU, and it's not Liv Tyler that voices her, but the person that does uses Liv Tyler's voice. It's got that very kind of soft sort of raspiness.
I'm into that.
Yeah, and when Hulk turns up in it, he's got the Ed Norton floppy hair instead of the kind of crop. Like, it's a weird mesh of this
weird... What if Ed Norton had carried on?
But
I like the sound of a murder mystery, though.
The thing about that one is that the end is really cool from, like, a comic book perspective, but it's got... You are just like... How is this the person that's responsible? There was nothing seeded in the entire episode before to make this payoff good, aside from the fact that if you know the comics, it's cool that they're doing this with that character because it references who they are in the comic books. So it's probably the weakest of the three, but is also like really enjoyable because of what it's doing. It just doesn't have the right level of payoff. But I think in general, that's something I find with the entire, like those three episodes so far, is I really like these pretty much more than any of the other MCU shows that Disney Plus have done so far, while knowing that they're not the best thing. And so the best way I can kind of equate this is, you know how kind of like the Tom Holland Spider-Man films are always really, really enjoyable, but you're not going to put them in your top tier Marvel bracket. It's that, basically.
Okay, yeah.
I know what you mean. Like, you know Dairy Milk's not technically the best chocolate on earth, but sometimes it's all you want. I'd rather have a bar of that than Lindor. Yeah. Lindor's better quality chocolate.
I'd rather buy it.
Imagine if your bar of Lindor, when you got to the end of it, it turned into like advent calendar chocolate, because that's what the MCU TV shows have been so far, isn't it? Like,
I suppose they've been. Yeah, I really like the end of Loki, though. That was kind of the opposite for me.
Yeah, the opposite way around. Like, the middle of it is advent calendar chocolate, but the end of it is like proper lint
and a bit. Of, yeah.
It's Lindor lint at the end.
Yeah. That's a well perfect analogy that I think everyone will follow on. Do you, because I know after Loki you were kind of thinking what if could have bigger implications to the MCU than people think. Are you still thinking that, or do you think we might just be getting some fun little things?
I mean, at the start it's presented as like, here's a bunch of alternate kind of storylines, and so there's nothing so far that has suggested that it is a Kang the Conqueror kind of link-in. They never do like a post credits until like episode like 5 or 6, do they? Like, I think that's when we'll find out. They'll lead you down one path, and then so I'm still fairly confident in that theory.
Nice, stick with it. I've got money on you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching the rest of those. And yeah, I was trying to work out, do I have enough time to talk about some 60 films? I don't know if people care. Let's do it. We haven't run that long so far. So if you didn't know, a few weeks ago, I thought, you know, here's a new fun feature. I'll go through every decade since the 50s and pick out a few films that people might not have seen that they should have. And not necessarily the most obvious ones, although, you know, there's going to be a couple that people be like, well, of course you should watch that. So here we go. From the 1960s, we're going to go with, and this is the obvious one from here, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched Butch, have you watched Butch Cassidy, Matt?
I have not, no.
Oh, well, Matt, here we go.
It's one of the big inspirations for Garrus Vakarian.
Oh, really?
Butch Cassidy, yeah.
Ah, okay.
I think you'd really like it. It's
my
amazing.
60s knowledge is very much around 60s sci-fi, because I really like 60s sci-fi, but actual real genres, in inverted commas, with real people.
So if you don't know what Butch Cassidy is, it's from 1969. It's Robert Redford and Paul Newman at their best playing Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And it's basically kind of, I think it's probably the biggest influence on Red Dead 2 as well, because it's all about kind of the end of the West and these two guys being left behind by it and seeing the end coming towards them. And it's just an amazing Western. It's my favourite Western. It's just one of my favourite films.
It's also written by the guy who did The Princess Bride.
Oh, really?
William Goldman, yeah.
Hmm. It's just incredible.
I feel like Arrested Development, it's like, please tell your friends about this movie.
And one of the most iconic, if not iconic, last shots of a film ever. Yeah. It's incredible. Just watch Butch Cassidy. West Side Story is another more obvious one. Maybe an obvious one coming from me, but it's just good preparation, because we've got the remake coming out in a couple of months. Lucy's doing some muted clicks. 1961 musical about two rival gangs in New York, and it's basically Romeo and Juliet with songs and knives. So yeah, Romeo and Juliet has knives as well, to be fair. So yeah, more knives, but yeah, very good songs. West Side Story. Now we're going a bit darker. Rosemary's Baby. Have we both seen Rosemary's Baby?
Yes.
What a film. One of my favourite horror films. And simple premises: a young couple moves into a New York apartment to start a family, but then things become frightening as Rosemary believes her unborn baby is not safe from the neighbours. It's so good, and it's just one of those, it's my favourite sort of horror film where it's just kind of, you know, it's no jump scares really, it's just quiet dread and unease for like 2 hours, and I've completely forgotten the name of the lead actress. What's her name? I've gone.
Mia Farrow.
Yes, is unbelievable in that film, especially towards the end of the film. So yeah, Rosemary's Baby as a horror, now a comedy, and I don't really like. I find comedy is maybe the genre that doesn't age most in film. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of comedies from the 60s, 70s, 80s hold up kind of much better, but definitely from that sort of age don't hold up as well. But Doctor Strangelove is still one of the funniest films you can watch. Have we seen Doctor Strangelove?
Yes. Many years ago, though.
Oh, come on, Matt. Yeah, I think you'd love Doctor Strangelove. Would. Yeah. Doctor Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, it's a Stanley Kubrick, has Peter Sellers in multiple roles, and it's after the insane general Jack D. Ripper initiates a nuclear strike on the Soviet Union, a war room full of politicians, generals, and a Russian diplomat all frantically try to stop the nuclear strike. It's a very contained film, it's a very bizarre film, and it's still very funny. So yeah, and the last one I've got is Midnight Cowboy, which is less of a fun film and quite a sad film. Oh. Have you seen Midnight Cowboy, Lucy?
No, I haven't.
Oh, this is kind of, I could see your lad on the train like in Midnight Cowboy, because I don't want to spoil it. It's just about a guy going to New York, basically hoping to score with the wealthy New York City women.
Oh,
it's about gigolos a bit.
Oh, okay.
But it's a very good film. Again, one of the great endings to a film. And it's got the famous I'm walking here line from Dustin Hoffman. Yeah. So there we go. Those are my recommendations for the 60s. Let me know if you watch any of them, because I know a couple of people did watch some from the 50s. But then, you know, next time we'll have the 70s, which is, to me, undoubtedly the peak of film. But there we go.
Well, films never got better than 40 years ago.
I don't think so. Have you seen the films that came out in the 70s?
What are you talking about? Your favourite film is There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, I know, but if you look at my top 10, I think about 6 of them are from the 70s. Mm. So there we go. That's for another time. Should we do an endless search?
Go on then. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games, gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games, gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search? Matt.
Hello.
You're gonna quiz me and Lucy here.
Mm-hmm. I'm pleased that you did a little bit of film stuff, because it leads us nicely into... Yeah. A round of PG tips.
Okay.
Are they all about 60s films?
They're not about 60s films, no, but they are about films. We've not done PG tips for a while, have we? Mm.
We haven't. Lucy, do you know what PG tips is?
I do, but I can't tell you what the rules are off the top of my head, but I have definitely listened to episodes where you have done PG tips, mm-hmm. and as soon as you explain to me, I will know what it is.
For anyone who's not a long-term listener, PG tips... Or Lucy. PG Oi. Tips is a game based on the user-submitted parental guidance
That's
on
it.
IMDb.
Damn it, because it's such a good pun!
So, I have 3 films here.
Okay.
Doing a swift version of it. Mm. And with each of those, I've got 5 pieces of user-submitted parental guidance. They start fairly obscure and get more and more obvious as they go on. If you can guess it on the obscure one, you get 5 points. And then it's a point lower for everyone until we get to the last one, which should pretty much give the game away.
Okay. Mm.
There is a link.
Ooh, let's do it. Get bonus, bonus points point. For a link? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, first film. First bit of parental guidance. A few parts in the movie where women wear bras and underwear. Some scenes last a good few minutes. No full nudity, but more scantily clad women than was expected. This is the point. This is the point. The nice thing about PG tips is because it's all user submitted, it's quite bonkers.
Yeah, something than expected. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of. I mean, it could be a lot of films that, couldn't it?
Mm-hmm. But more nudity than expected.
Are we buzzing in? Are we.
Just shout.
Legally Blonde.
No.
Clueless.
Mean Girls.
No.
Is there any women in bras in Mean Girls? I don't know. This
moving on
could be a lot of films.
Yeah. For 4 points, a main character stabs a man twice in the hand with a knife. There's no blood. And then stabs another man in the stomach. There's no blood. And then shoots two men. Still, no blood.
No blood. Stabbing in the hand with no blood. Raiders of the Lost Ark?
No.
Stabs a man twice in the hand. Once in the stomach and then shoots...
two men. And there's not a single drop of blood.
Shoots two men. Stab in the... I feel like this... Casino Royale?
Picture it, Cardi. No, it's not
Skyfall? It's not a Bond, is it?
I mean, if it was a Bond, you would definitely expect scantily clad women. That's sort of one of the MOs of those films.
Austin Powers.
No, it's not coming.
Right, let's go to 3 points. In probably the most disturbing scene in the film, a man shoots a young boy's mother in front of him, point blank.
Ooh. Batman Begins?
No, not
Batman 1989.
Not Batman 1989.
The Dark Knight.
Is it about Joker?
Not the Dark Knight. It's not Joker.
Dark Knight Rises.
It's not the Dark Knight.
Batman Returns.
Batman and Robin.
It's not Batman and Robin.
Batman vs. Superman.
It's not Batman vs.
Superman. It's not a Batman film, is it?
It's not Justice League.
Wonder Woman.
It's not Wonder Woman.
Batman Forever.
It's not Batman Forever.
Is it a Batman film?
I'm not saying
that. Oh,
I'm just going to keep guessing. Right. It's not a Batman film, alright? Let's stop saying Batman.
What other films is a kid killed in front of her? The parents are killed or the kid is killed. I've forgotten now.
In probably the most disturbing scene in the film, a man shoots a young boy's mother in front of him, point blank.
I feel like that should be a big... That is a big scene in this film.
Said Joker, right?
Yeah, it just can't...
Batman versus Superman.
It can't be a Batman. It's not a Batman film. It's
not a Batman film.
The mother dies.
What I will say is, you're in kind of the right sphere.
Okay.
Oh, it's Civil War.
It's not Civil War.
No, it's not Civil War. It's,
Is it?
Wait, isn't there... he's not in front of him. Her issue.
Might need the next
one. Are we going to the next one? Yeah. Okay. The various powers and abilities of the different mutants in the film can be frightening, especially the bad ones.
X-Men 2? No.
X-Men
1.
X-Men 3.
X-Men First Class. There we go.
It's the Magneto bit, is it?
So the bit where he shoots his mum is the Auschwitz stuff that's at the start of the film. Mm-hmm. The stabbing is when Magneto's in the bar with the two German dudes.
Mm-hmm.
The nudity bit is they go to like a weird club, don't they? Where they get Zoe Kravitz's character.
Look, and... if it was X-Men 2, X-Men United, I would have... Because that's when...
I couldn't make it that easy for you. Yeah. I know you like that film.
Yeah. Come on, Lucy. It's not made for you. That's...
Damn it. Okay.
Right. Second film. For 5 points. In brackets, friendly alien severed head is placed on a table and green blood squishes out of it.
Paul.
Not Paul.
Eat it. No. Mars Attacks.
It's not Mars Attacks. No.
When's the last time you watched Mars Attacks? I used to love that film.
Oh, it's Men in Black.
It's not Men in Black.
Mm.
It's not, Lucy.
No, I thought it was the bit with the thing.
A friendly alien.
Well, yeah, because Men in Black 2. Mm. Don't they chop a guy's head off and they chat with him?
I was just talking to myself, a friendly alien. I'm trying to think of a friendly alien. Don't know.
Moving on.
Yeah.
For 4 points, a man is melted away by lightning. Pretty graphic, i.e. Raiders of the Lost Ark end scene stuff.
Melted away by lightning.
It could mean like a lightning gun of some sort or something.
So probably not going to be X-Men.
Independence Day?
Not Independence Day.
Doesn't happen. That doesn't. Guardians of the Galaxy?
It's not Guardians of the Galaxy, no.
Ahead.
Melted lightning. Man of Steel.
Not Man of Steel. We're moving on to the three-pointer.
Yeah,
I think we might. Yeah.
A small talking droid character who is in poor physical condition is said to have been mistreated based on its evasive behaviour towards the crew. The interaction is akin to confronting a dog that's been physically abused.
Oh my god. Wait, Star Wars?
Is it Star Wars A New Hope? Yeah.
It's not Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker? It is Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker.
Oh god,
The Rise of Skywalker.
I was like, that's the one I can remember the least, so that's the one I'll go for.
Yeah. Who's Matt? I suppose, yeah. Do we want to spoil Rise of Skywalker?
It's been longer. It's been over a year, hasn't it?
I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyway. So that's three to Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
In the lead.
With Rise of Skywalker.
Cardi, are you going to take it back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go on then.
Third film, final film.
Mm.
5 points. Four. The villain uses performance enhancers near the beginning of the movie.
Joker.
Not Joker.
We live.
Who's the real villain in that film, though? Performance enhancers.
We're moving on.
Nothing's coming.
Okay, for 4 points. After being attacked, a secondary character is yelling in the hospital that she saw very big, scary yellow eyes. This moment can be some disturbing.
Some disturbing.
Big, scary big, yellow scary. Eyes. That rings a bell. That rings a bell in my head.
After being
I feel
attacked.
Like I've watched whatever this is recently. Maybe I haven't. But the big scary yellow eyes thing.
You've not mentioned it to me.
Oh,
but maybe you
wait,
have.
Lucy? No. It?
No.
No.
Well, one thing
Cats,
I will, I'll give you
2019.
A kind of, I'll give you like a minor clue for this one because I've had to change the name of the character to a secondary character, obviously, to not spoil it.
Right.
I will say that secondary character is reasonably old in years.
Okay.
Oh. Schmidt, what was the first clue again? Sorry.
The villain uses performance enhancers near the beginning of the movie.
Is this Spider-Man? Spider-Man 2?
It is Spider-Man,
oh!
Cardi.
Because it's going to have Willem Dafoe in it. I worked the link out.
Have you?
The 12 minutes cast.
It is the 12 minutes cast.
Damn, very, very good.
We
go.
Congratulations,
well done.
The first thing I was thinking, the lighthouse, I'm like... No, he doesn't. They don't do performance enhancing in that.
Imagine if they were doing performance enhancers at the start of the lighthouse.
Maybe they were. Who knows?
Just go. Drop kicking mermaids into the sea.
Well done, Cardi. That was very good. Well done, Matt. That was a very fun quiz.
I did tell you I'd come back, Lucy.
Yeah, you did. He's a man of his word.
There we go. That was a joy. Shall we move on to some feedback, which again this week is about the British smash sitcom. I can't remember. I feel like I call it sitcom smash even. That's what we call it. Obviously, Lucy, it's the first time you've been on to talk about this. Matt, it's also the first time you've been on to talk about this. And I know that you had a great suggestion, which is actually the piece of feedback you're going to read out to someone who's had the same idea as you. So maybe you can riff off of that. But first, I'll lead off with a piece of feedback here we've got from Harry Murfitt Barber. That's a great name. His character suggestion is, and I like this one a lot, Chris Morris, the presenter of the day-to-day Ambrosi. So it's kind of, I suppose they're kind of similar-ish characters, so you could morph them into one, which is just the Chris Morris sort of satire character. And he'd be a Ganon-style powerful brawler with a ranged variety of ranged specials. He can stun opponents by intimidating them. He can throw bomb dogs as a ranged weapon. He has an area of effect weapon by dropping the drug cake. Its effect on the part of the brain called Shatner's bassoon that deals with time perception puts the opponent into slow motion. I love Shatner's bassoon. So that episode, all of Brass Eye is incredible, but the drugs and the animals episode are the best. And maybe Peter Geddon.
Have I ever told you about the drugs episode? My English teacher showed it our class at school. Have I told you this story?
No.
What?
I don't think so.
It was my last day at school, and obviously we were all going to university kind of like in a couple of months. So my English teacher was like, I want to show you a documentary about stuff that like you've got to be really careful about when you go to uni. He just puts Brass Eye on. I had seen Brass Eye before, but nobody else in the class had. And it took them so fucking long to cotton on to the fact that this wasn't real.
Oh my god.
Madness. Cake. Shatner's bassoon.
Shatner's
his special calls in a random day-to-day Brass Eye correspondent or guest. For example, Alan Partridge kicks a football at an enemy and shouts twat. Why not? Peter Ahanrahanrahan wraps enemies up in a cobweb. Mm-hmm. Swimming pool security guard loses a dangerous pigeon. And Sebastian Coe appears to throw jam. Respect the sea, fear the whales. From Harry. It's very good. I've always got time for Chris Morris content. I haven't watched the day-to-day in a while. I watch Brass Eye regularly, like probably twice a year. But day-to-day I don't do as often. But
maybe not as easy to get, is it?
I do think almost all of Brass Eye is on youtube.com. It's a little tip for people out there.
Is it on BritBox?
It sounds like the sort of thing. That, exactly. I don't know.
No one has BritBox.
But yeah, if you haven't watched Brass Eye, watch Brass Eye. Lucy, before you read your piece of feedback, have you got maybe a suggestion for the roster?
Well, so I was thinking of Thermo Man from the BBC sitcom My Hero. But after hearing that piece of feedback, what about the cast of Shooting Stars? Like Vic and Bob.
All of them.
Vic and Bob, you can call in Geordie Dawes. You've got the dove from above.
Yep.
So, Urikakaka. My favorite bit is the handbags, which I could just imagine slapping. Oh, and also like the rub in the thighs. It's just
Here's what I have to say about this, Lucy, and don't take this the wrong way. Love the suggestion. Technically not a sitcom.
Well, but
a comedy panel show.
But it has elements, you know? It has elements.
It has scripted scenes, so maybe we'll allow it.
Brass Eye, not a sitcom. It's not a situational comedy. It's its own sort of thing. It's a mockumentary.
The situation
does that mean
the
Office
panel show.
Isn't a sitcom? Is that a mockumentary? I don't know. The Office is a sitcom, though.
The Office is definitely a sitcom, yeah, because they're made-up situations, aren't they? They're dramas, whereas Brass Eye isn't a drama.
I suppose. I'm still allowed. Do you know what? We're allowing it. It's now the funny
allow
show
it.
Smash... Exactly, allow it. But anyway, what has John got to say, Lucy?
John Summerfield says, Rick Mails, Richie from Bottom, in his grubby undies, of course, various kitchen utensils as weapons. Special is Eddie coming in as an assist to help absolutely wail on the opponent from either side. Maybe more appropriate for British mortal sit combat, though. And then the emoji, John Summerfield.
That's a good pun that we didn't think of there for sit combat. That is good. I like that. We haven't got any Rick Mail in yet, which seems a crime. Now we do. This is such an incredible roster. I will say, Lucy, before the show, I quite liked your suggestion of just all three of the women from Birds of a Feather. Just get Pauline Quirk in.
And then I googled it because I realised that I haven't watched Birds of a Feather in like 20 years. And I'd completely forgotten that the main plot of that show is that all of their husbands have gone to jail. And then that's why they bond. And I was like, oh, yeah.
I don't think I ever watched it. But there you go. We haven't had, what's his name? I've quite forgotten the lead character from One Foot in the Grave, Victor Meldrew. How is Victor Meldrew not in? Oh, get him in.
Kevin.
God, there's too many characters. Like I said, we've got lots of feedback about this, so I'm sorry if we don't read them out, but we have got a lot. A couple of people, I think, actually, maybe even three people, suggested the next character, Matt, who is also your pick mm-hmm. for the roster.
I couldn't believe this wasn't in the original OG lineup.
Well, because I know you wanted it, so I didn't say
it. I didn't voice it before the podcast, because I knew it wasn't on that episode.
Well, there we go.
Anyway, from Gary Noble, a man of taste. Hey, IGN UK team. I love listening to the podcast every week and was particularly enjoying the niche nature of creating a BSS lineup in the last few weeks, with the only disappointment being the admission of one excellent potential roster member. If you're okay with making the game rated 18, which I think it sort of has to be, then you can't look past the sheer rage of Malcolm Tucker from the thick of it.
Mm, absolutely.
Very I've given good. A little thought, and he'd have a number of key moves. He would very much be a character based around status effects impacts. He would be able to pull in enemies close, like Scorpion, while shouting, "Get over here," in a stern, aggressive manner. He would have a shout called "Fucking Lockdown," where anyone within his AoE is unable to move until he's out of range or they get hit. He has a status effect move called Berate, where he hurls abuse at enemies and weakens their defense. He would be able to turn any opponent's weapon into a marzipan dildo, making it completely useless. And lastly, his special move is Omen Shambles. This is much like Cloud's Omen Slash from Final Fantasy VII, but with every hit, he throws another swear word at the enemy. This would also allow you to add the House of Commons to the playable levels, and what's more British than that? Hope you take my suggestion on board and maybe even do a BSS special. If you guys can make a drowning special work, I'm sure this would be just as welcomed.
I feel like we're covering all of these emails. I mean, Omni Shambles, Lockdown, all very good attacks. Mm. I know your big ultimate move was going to be Lockdown.
Right? Yeah. Mine was more of, rather than individual locking characters down, you'd be able to lock the entire map and everybody would be stuck. But that's about as far as I got with the thought of it. I just really like the idea of Malcolm Tucker bumbling around.
I can see him doing, like, spin kicks. I can see it.
Oh, I can. Throwing stuff.
I haven't watched the thick of it in a couple of years. Maybe I need to rewatch it.
Maybe you could summon Ollie in and get Ollie to do shit for him.
I was thinking, who's the one who kind of almost replaces him? The other Scottish character replacement is arguably even worse than him. Swears even more. It's so good. It's almost too... I think we had this chat the other day. It's almost too close to what has happened now. You watch it nowadays and you go, this has happened.
It's weird because every time you watch it, regardless of what period it's been over about the last 6 years, it's always relevant to what's going on at the current, which probably shows you how horribly secular British politics is.
Yeah. There we go. What a lovely way to end the podcast this week. Look at that. We're around an hour. We've done good time there. That's efficient. Maybe, Lucy, you just make us efficient.
Aw. That's my job.
Is it?
No.
I've had a lovely time. What music should we have? What are we thinking? The ghost music is one of my favourite bits of that game. I do think the music is unbelievable. So maybe we'll have some Ghost of Tsushima music. The main theme. If you haven't watched, we've got a great video up on site at the moment called The Art of the Level. It's all about the opening of Ghost of Tsushima. And it's a good insight into how they designed that and the design decisions that went into it. And thank you to everyone who watched our KDA piece, mine and Matt's. We had a lot of fun making that, and we've had a lot of good feedback. So thank you very much. Yay. Let's listen to some ghost music, and we'll see you later. Goodbye.
See ya.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal.
700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.